Side 5, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 176. The hares sat down to rest a moment in the long, down-sloping tunnel. Bramwell rubbed the back of his neck and complained,
"Ooh, 'tain't much fun marching with the old neck bent all day. Ceiling should be a bit higher, what?"
Stiffener smiled at the ancient hare.
"Marching all day, you say? How'd you know whether 'tis day or night? Looks all the same to me down here."
Bramwell tugged at Blunch's smock.
How are things on the victual front, Marm? Give young Stiffener a carrot. He can't tell night from bally day, what? I can, though, and I'll tell you how. That blue light ahead is going dimmer, so it must be evening out there."
Blench turned her bag inside out and shook it.
"Ain't a crumb of victuals left, old Bram. You're right, though. It must be getting dark outside. The light has faded."
"I could do a spot of damage to a rhubarb tart right now. Wouldn't mind if it was hot or jolly well cold."
Stiffener glared at Willop in the torchlight.
"A word in your ear, Marm. Don't start talking about scoff. 'Tis the fastest way for a hare to go mad. You'll have every beast going on about feasts they were at seasons ago. All that ripe fruit and crumbly cheese and summer salad, aye, and bilberry cordial. Look, you've got me at it now."
Troby's stomach rumbled, and he sighed unhappily.
"Yes, let's. Well, what else is there to bloomin' well talk about? My tummy's in a blinkin' turmoil."
Stiffener peered down the tunnel.
"Then think about how lucky we are. Light fading means we got a good chance of not being spotted under cover of darkness. There's something in our favor, mates."
Perlow started up, batting at his scut.
"Youch! Confound it! Some beast just bit me."
Stiffener swung the torch in his direction.
"Where?" "Right on the end of me bobtail, old lad. Where do you think?"
Stiffener shoved him roughly aside.
"I never asked where you were bit. I meant where was the beast that bit you?"
Blanche held out her no longer empty bag with both paws.
"Ah, look, bless him. 'Tis only a little crab thing. Got a spiky back, too. Big claws for such a young'un, though."
Perlow wagged his paw in the crab's face.
"You small cad! How dare you bite my tail? Wait till I tell your mama!"
Troby grabbed the torch from Stiffener and stared wide-eyed.
"Zounds! You won't have long to wait, old lad! Here comes his mama right now, and the whole confounded crab clan!"
They were spiny spider crabs, with spiked backs covered in sharp spines, long red legs, and fearsome-looking claws. Very aggressive crustaceans indeed. Blench tipped the baby crab onto the floor in a hurry.
"Oh, corks! There must be hundreds and hundreds of the villains! What do you suppose they want?"
Stiffener weighed up the dangerous situation.
"So that's what the rhyme meant, the spinies! Listen to that water noise building up down there. The tide must be coming in. We're in those crabs' way. They're trying to get further up the tunnel to stop themselves being washed away by the waves. I don't like the way they're clacking those big nipper things and opening their jaws. Maybe they think we're victuals, something good to eat."
Scuttling sideways, the teeming masses of crabs advanced, claws held high and snapping open and shut, blowing froth and bubbles from their gaping mouths. The noise of them could be heard over the advancing tide outside. It sounded like a shower of hailstones as their hard-shelled legs rattled against the rocks. The hares looked to Stiffener.
"What do you think we should do?"
The boxing hare decided instantly there was only one answer to Bramwell's query.
"We've got to run for it, straight through the middle of those blighters, and not stop for anything. They're trying to get away from the sea. We're trying to get to it. Might be a bit of an help. Troby, me and you will take the lead and see if and we can batter through. The rest of you stay close together. Willop, Blench, stick in the middle. Keep tight, old Bramwell. Well, here goes, mates. Eulalia!"
The charge carried them helter-skelter down the tunnel straight into the crabs. Troby and Stiffener bulled aside as many as they could, striking about with a couple of javelins. It was an almost impossible task. Hares and crabs were so tightly packed in the narrow tunnel confines that it was difficult to make way. Powerful claws tore the javelins from their paws, spiny shells bumped them painfully, pointed legs scratched at them in the wild scramble. Some crabs were toppled over backward, and the hares ran over their hard-shelled undersides, avoiding kicking legs and snapping pincers. However, it could not last. The tunnel was far too narrow, and soon became completely jammed with a jumbled melee of hares and crabs. Stiffener looked up. A gigantic specimen was bearing down upon him with both claws ready for action.
Troby! Throw me the torch, quick!
The boxing hare scorched his paws as he caught the torch and thrust it savagely into the big crab's mouth. It gurgled and hissed, latching both claws onto the torch. It was a scene of complete chaos, with trapped hares shouting amid the forest of clacking pincers.
Ah! Get this thing off of me! Ow! Ouch! Me ear! Let go, you rotter! Gear off! Hold Bramwell up! Don't let him fall!
Eek! There's one got me nose!
Then the wave came. Peak of high tide sent a monstrous roller crashing up the tunnel entrance with all the awesome power of the stormy sea. Boiling white, blue, and green, it shot up the bore of the rocky passage and hit the mass of hares and crabs like a mighty sledgehammer, shooting them hard uphill. Then it sucked them back in a whirling vacuum of seawater. Stiffener spun like a top, jolting against rocks and crab shells, his nose, mouth, eyes, and ears choked by the salt water. The entire world became white and filled with roaring noise as he went ears over scut. Stomach down, he was hurled flat, his mouth gaping wide as he skidded along until it was full of sand. A moment later, he was upright in the night air, waist-deep with waves bashing him. Coughing up grit and brine, he wiped the stinging seawater from his eyes. A familiar figure waded toward him. Blench.
Watch out, Stiff! Here comes Willip!
A wave sent Willip crashing into the boxing hare's back. He staggered up and joined paws with hers and the cook.
Keep tight, old marms! Let's find the others! Where's old Bramwell got to? Any beasts seen him? Hi there, young feller! Over here, what?
Only then did Stiffener realize that it was raining hard. Bramwell was sitting on the shore in the downpour, waving a piece of driftwood, several others with him. Troby came swimming along, his head popping up alongside Stiffener. He saluted, sank, and resurfaced, spitting a jet of seawater into the air.
Fwah! All present and correct, I think. There's Perlo flopping about up coast. Ahoy there, Perlo! How do you do? Fine, old chap! How are you? Lots of weather we're having for the time of season, what?
Keep your voices down, mates, Stiffener called out in the loudest whisper he could muster. There might be vermin patrols around. Bramwell, we'll meet you in the lee of those rocks.
It was a cold, windy, wet, and moonless night as they huddled together on the north side of a ragged rock spur. Bramwell could just make out the shape of Salamandastron's dark bulk to the south of where they sat.
This chunk of rock is part of our mountain, a great spur, buried beneath the sand and sticking up again here by the sea.
Willip crouched down and scuttled toward the end of the rock protruding into the sea.
Bramwell's right, she reported when she came back. I saw the mouth of the tunnel we came out of, though 'tis so thickly overgrown with seaweed, a body would never know 'twas there, what?
Bramwell shivered, shaking his saturated fur.
Well, we made it, chaps. We're alive and free, but with no weapons or food. What next, young Stiff, eh?
Stiffener blinked rain from his eyes.
Can't stay here, that's for sure, mates. We'd best move while the going's good. There's some rock ledges and dunes east of here. I picked blackberries there last autumn. Let's take a look over that way, eh?
In the hour before dawn, they topped a rise in the sandhills. Some white limestone cliff ridges loomed up on their left. The rain was becoming heavier, whipped sideways by the wind. With both ears plastered flat to his head and his fur thoroughly sand-gritted and wet, Stiffener looked back in the direction of Salamandastron.
See, Lord, I kept me vow so far, and don't you fret now. I'll be going back to our mountain, and if there be a single hare alive there, I'll rescue him. I promise.
20. Dottie had never in her life seen anything like the court of King Bucko.
nor had any of her traveling companions. It was situated in a broad, beautiful woodland glade, backed by a steep, rocky hill with a stream bordering one side, fringed with crack willow, gelder rose, and osier. But any resemblance to a peaceful sylvan setting ended there. It was packed to bursting with teeming life. Lord Brocktree's party wandered about relatively unnoticed. There were moles, otters, voles, hedgehogs, mice, squirrels, and shrews everywhere, but hares formed the main presence. Hares, big, strong, young, and bold. Fleet Scott nodded at them. He had to raise his voice so that Dottie could hear him above the din as they pushed and jostled their way through.
"Well, snap me ears! We've got a right bunch of corkers here, miss. There's a lot of mountain hares. One can tell by the remains of their white winter patches, what? As for the rest, there's a few gypsies, but a chap can recognize the offspring of salamandastron hares. You know, I can pick out the ears and faces of most. Look just like their mothers and fathers, they do. Deary me, it makes me feel jolly old, I can tell you. Some of these great lumps of fur and bone, huh, I bounced them on me knee when they were tiny leverets."
Dottie giggled at the thought it conjured up.
"Hee hee! You'd get a blinkin' broken knee if you tried bouncing any of those big hulkin' boyos now, what?"
A carnival atmosphere reigned over the court. Groups of hedgehogs competed with oak clubs on hollow logs, trying to outdrum one another. Squirrels were performing acrobatic feats, flying over the heads of the crowd. A mob of young otters lounged against a stack of barrels with foaming tankards in their paws, roaring out bawdy songs with no pretense whatsoever to harmony or tune, volume seeming to take precedence over all else. Shrews and voles wrestled in packs, one team against another. Mice and moles were cooking over a huge open fire, laughing as they exchanged friendly insults about the results of each other's culinary efforts. A motley orchestra had set itself up on the lower hill slopes. All manner of creatures scraped on fiddles, rattled tambourines, shrilled on flutes and whistles, battered away at borans, flat single-headed drums with double-ended striking sticks, and twanged a variety of odd stringed instruments. Some mountain hares even droned away on sets of bagpipes. Lord Brocktree was the only badger present at the massive gathering, standing out head and shoulders above other beasts. His back-slung battle sword received many admiring glances, and not many creatures tried to bump or jostle him. In fact, not any. The badger lord winced, clapping paws over both his ears.
"By my stripes! How any creature could put up with this infernal din is beyond me! Let's find somewhere less noisy."
They took refuge on the stream bank beneath a couple of crack willows, which afforded generous shade. Log-a-log Gren signaled two of her guasum.
"Cubba! Ruko! Find your way back to the ford and see if you can find a side stream to bring our boats up here."
Juka sprang moodily to a low willow branch, where she jabbed her short spear viciously into the trunk.
"I like it not, this place of loud fools. 'Tis an affront to the ears and eyes, a gathering of mad beasts."
Fleetscut noticed she was staring accusingly at him.
"Well, pish tush and a pity about you, milady. What do you want me to do about it, eh? Do I run around shushing them all up? Or would you prefer me to carry you back to your pine grove, what?"
Whirling her loaded sling, Juka sprang down.
"Thou hast insulted me enough, long ears. Let's settle this thing betwixt us, here and now."
Brocktree was between them suddenly, knocking the sling awry.
"Cast one stone, Juka sling, and I'll snap off the paw that does it, and feed it to you."
A hare, with six others attending him, marched up to Brocktree.
"By the cringe in the left, sir, you'll be the badger lord who comes a-visiting, what? His Majesty King Bucko wants a word with you. Don't know who you other bods are, but you'd best wait here, what?"
Fleetscott placed himself in front of the officious young hare.
"Aye, but one of these other bods knows who you jolly well are, earwag. Son of Bramwell, if I'm not mistaken." You won't remember me, but I knew you. Little fat feller with a runny nose, always sniffin' and weepin'. What was it they called you? Dribbler, that was it."
The hare, a fine, fit-looking beast, sniffed and turned on his heel, stating huffily,
"That, sir, was a nickname.
I'm properly called Wyndcote Bramwell Lepus II. You may bring your retinue with you if you wish, Lord Badger."
Stifling a smile, Brocktree addressed his creatures. "Fall in and follow me, retinue. Let's go and see this bucko." Steps made from logs led up to the fork of an old cherry laurel, padded and draped with hanging velvet to form the royal throne. King Bucko Big Bones was bigger than most hares, and obviously strong-framed. He lounged casually in the tree fork, one footpaw dangling, the other up against the outward-leaning left limb. A broad belt girdled his ample waist, decorated with colored stones, polished arrowheads, and lots of medallions. Around his head, though cocked jauntily over one eye, he wore a gold circlet interwoven with laurel leaves. In one paw, he held a scepter of sculpted oak with a crystal chip set in its top. He cast an eye over his visitors as if they were of no great interest. "Do you know bow your hides or bend a knee, Tay a King?" Brocktree's answer was equally dismissive. "We bow to no creature, even self-appointed kings. Do you not find it common courtesy to rise in the presence of a badger lord, instead of sitting draped up there like a drunken beast?" The royal guards surrounding the tree throne put paws to their weapons, but the king shook his head at them. "Nay, call for that. Yon beast'd probably floor the lot of ye. Jings, but you're a big un, and saucy too, as I heard. By the rocks! That's a braw battle blade ye bear. I'll trade you for it. Anything ye like." Brocktree raised a paw to touch the double-hilted weapon. "My sword wouldn't do you any good. And it's not for sale or trade. You and another like you couldn't lift it." King Bucko laughed and bounded down the steps, paw outstretched. He gripped the badger's paw and applied pressure. "Ach, I like you well, my friend. Do you mean to challenge me?" Brocktree stood smiling easily, allowing Bucko to squeeze his paw to the maximum. Then the badger lord squeezed back. White-faced and trembling, the hare was forced to his knees. He managed a pained smile. "Jings, I hope you don't challenge me. Would you not let my paw free afore you flatten it completely?" The badger released his paw. Bucko stood up, massaging it and smiling ruefully. "Don't worry, I won't be challenging you," Brocktree assured him. "But one of my party will. I'll let you know who when the time's right." Bucko glanced over Brocktree's followers, then dashed up to Skittles and knelt in front of the hog babe. "Ha! So you're the wee terror who wants to fight King Bucko, eh? Let's see what you can do then, my laddie." Skittles needed no second bidding. He jumped upon the hare and began pummeling him with his tiny paws.
"I fight ya! Skittles be's a good fighterer!"
Bucko held him off, shouting in mock horror.
"Ack! Get the wild wee beastie off me or I'll be kilt!"
Still rubbing his paw, he winked at Brocktree.
"Just as weel you never break it my paw. I've got a challenge to answer shortly. Gang ye along and watch. 'Twill be a bit of sport to entertain ye. Guards, bring my battle gown."
The guards draped King Bucko in a magnificently embroidered cloak, and he set off, with Brocktree and the others following. A log-circled ring had been cleared further down the stream bank. Dottie stood between Ruff and Girth to view the combat. Creatures packed the circle's edge, 50 deep, while others climbed trees or took to the rocks. An enormous hedgehog stood to one side of the ring, a gang of his followers stroking his spikes and massaging his hefty, gnarled paws. He kept shrugging his shoulders and sniffing a lot. King Bucko entered the ring to deafening applause. Throwing off his cloak, he joined both paws over his head and shook them at his followers in salute. There was a line scratched at the ring's center. Bucko stepped up to it, flexing both knees and rolling his head about to limber up. The big hedgehog stepped up, threw a few punches in midair, and snuffled. A fat bank bull came next, who stood between the contestants, and roared out the rules in a voice that would have put a choir of crows to shame.
"Good creatures, all! Attend my words!"
The crowd fell silent as the bank bull swelled his chest out.
"This day! A challenge has been given to your king, Bucko Big Bones, the wild March Hare of the North Mountains, by none other than Pickle Paw Iron Spikes, champion of the southern coasts. Rules are as follows. No weapons or harms to be used by either beast. Apart from that, anything goes. The fighter left standing picks up the crown as victor.
Silence continued as Bucko gave his crown to the bank bull, who marched 10 paces over the ground and held it high. He dropped the crown, and as it hit the ground, the fight started. Dottie could not hear herself think for the noise.
Ock! Give him the old one, too, Your Majesty.
Show him the pickle paw punch. Go on, Iron Spikes. I'll give 10 candied chestnuts to one on His Majesty. A silver dagger to a copper spoon, old Iron Spikes drops him.
Watch out for his jolly old left, sire.
Don't wait around, Iron Spikes. Get in there.
With a footpaw each on the line, the fighters faced each other. Both ducked and weaved, though it was only the hedgehog throwing massive barnstorming swipes with left and right. As yet, the hare had not offered a single blow. He stood firm, merely bobbing and bending backward, avoiding each haymaker as it whooshed by overhead or either side of him. Bucko was smiling, Iron Spikes almost purple with anger and exertion. Dottie could not help whispering to Girth,
"What's King Bucko doing? Why doesn't he try to hit the hog?"
Girth kept both eyes on the fighters, assessing them.
"Ye king be a girt scrapper, miz. Him were any hedge pig down. Look ye now, Miss Dot. Ye king gotten old Iron Spikes."
The hair maid could not see how Bucko had the hedgehog beaten. Suddenly Iron Spikes dropped one of his paws and straightened up, just for a split second, but that was enough. Bucko crouched and swung a massive sideways left as he came up. Bump! It connected with Iron Spike's jaw, his eyes rolled, and he fell like a stone, spark out. Dottie had to shout to make herself heard over the cheering.
Oh, Corks! What a fighter! What a punch! I'll bet no beast could beat King Bucko, eh, Girth?
The good mole smiled at his young friend.
Miz, no beast could beat a king at boxing, but I bet my tunnel a clever wrestler would, aye.
King Bucko picked up the crown and replaced it on his head, and the hares draped his cloak about him. He leapt over the logs right where Dottie was standing and winked roguishly at the hare maid.
Ach, 'twas a piece of cake, lassie. Yon hog was not but a great fat brawler. Ahey, you're a pretty wee thing, ain't you?
Dottie did not want to appear over-impressed by Bucko, so she stiffened both ears and looked distant.
Actually, pretty's the wrong word, sir. I'm a fatal beauty, really. Runs in the family, you know.
Bucko smiled as he chucked her under the chin.
Ach, away with you, missy. I've seen fatal beauties, and you're no one of those. Still, like I say, you're a pretty wee thing.
He swept by her and was carried off on the shoulders of his jubilant supporters. Ruff noticed Dottie's quivering lip and angry features and put a paw about her shoulders.
Ahoy there, me old mate. What's wrong with your face?
The hare maid shrugged off Ruff's paw.
Nothing. There's absolutely nothing wrong with my face. But I'll jolly well tell you something, Ruff. I don't like that cad Bucko King, or whatever he calls himself. I'd like to take the blighter down a peg or three, what?
Ruff stared at her in surprise.
An air maiden like you, Dottie? You think you could beat him?
The noise was audible as her teeth ground together.
I don't think. I know I can beat the blusterin' bounder.
Campfires burned all over the glade area as night fell, warm and soft. Lanterns hung in the trees reflected their colors into the stream. King Bucko's court was celebrating yet another victory by their ruler. The noise and merriment continued unabated. Dottie sat with Fleet Scut beneath the willow. The rest of their party had gone off to join in the fun and games. The old hare had a worried look as he spoke to his young friend.
I say, dash it all, Miss Dottie. I was the one who should have challenged Bucko Big Bones, not you, a young hair maid, what?
Dottie poured cider for Fleet Scott.
Sorry, old chum. You're far too old. He'd eat you. Besides, you ain't the one he bloomin' well insulted. The honor of the Duckfontein Dilworthies was at stake. I had to challenge the rotter. Not a fatal beauty, eh? I'll show him.
The dark bulk of Lord Brocktree loomed up out of the night. He joined the two hares beneath the willow, shaking his head at Dottie.
I delivered your challenge to Bucko Big Bones.
Sorry, miss. He wouldn't accept it. The hairmaid sprang up, eyes flashing angrily.
Wouldn't accept it? What do you mean, sir?
The Badger Lord shrugged. He just flatly refused to accept any challenge from a young maid. I delivered the message formally, with due gravity and ceremony. It was all done with proper dignity. Dottie was quivering all over, apart from her ears, which stood up ramrod straight.
And what did the blackguard say? Tell me, sir, word for word.
Brocktree's huge paws fiddled about with a thin branch.
He said you should be at home, he explained, almost apologetically, helping your mama to do the washing, and that the whole thing was a silly little joke.
Then he laughed with his cronies for a while and told me to tell you there was no way he was going to fight a hair maiden. Said one tap of his paw and your face wouldn't be so pretty, not with a broken jaw. His final words were, learn to cook and stay clear of real warriors before you become fatally injured with no chance of ever becoming a fatal beauty.
That's it, as best as I can remember, miss.
Dottie grabbed Fleet Scott roughly and hauled him upright.
Give me that box scroll you were telling me about, the one found by that rabble hog. Give it to me this bloomin' instant.
The old hare rummaged in his tunic and produced the battered and stained scroll. Dottie snatched it from him.
Listen to this, sir. The blighter's own challenge.
Her voice shaking with temper, she read the lines aloud.
Come, mother, father, daughter, son, my challenge stands to any beast. I'll take on all or just the one, whether at the fight or feast. Aye, try to beat me and defeat me. Set 'em up, I'll knock 'em down. Just try to outbrag me, you'll see. King Bucko Big Bones wears the crown.
She waved the tattered bark scroll in Brocktree's face.
Now, sir, you've heard it. Is that a challenge or not, what?
The Badger Lord nodded gravely.
Couldn't be any clearer. 'Tis a challenge, right enough.
Dottie quickly rolled the scroll and jammed it in her belt.
Ha! Huh, that's flippin' well good enough for me. Come on!
She stormed off, her footpaws almost punching holes in the ground. A wide grin spread across the badger's face. He took hold of Fleet Scott's paw, tugging him along in her wake.
Hurry along, old one. I wouldn't miss this for a feast prepared by Long Ladle himself. Things are going to plan, even better than I dared hope they would.
King Bucko was in high good humor. He sat on his tree fork throne, swilling dandelion beer and laughing uproariously with his comrades, as he relived the fight with Iron Spikes that afternoon.
Ach, the fat old fraud was swinging both paws like a windmill and puffing like a northeast gale, do you ken? So I just ducked and came up with my good old left cross. Wacko! Did you see the big bra pincushion topple? Ha, ha, ha!
Aye, you pick the easy marks, don't you, Bucko?
The laughter ceased. All eyes turned on Dottie, who was standing, paws akimbo, on the bottom log step. The king waved his scepter dismissively at her.
Ach, away with ye, lassie. Go and look for some babbies to nurse.
Sycophant hares around the throne guffawed loudly. Dottie bounded up the steps and shook out the bark scroll. She thrust it under the king's nose.
It says here that you'll fight mother, father, daughter, or son. That's what it says, right?
The big mountain hare flicked the scroll from her paws with his scepter and tossed it over his shoulder.
Maybe it does, maybe it don't. What are you getting so stirred up about, my pretty one?
Dottie's paw prodded him hard in the chest.
Don't you ever call me your pretty one, you great blowbag. I'm here to take up your challenge.
One of the guards tried to lay paws on Dottie for prodding his king. He froze as a sword point from below tickled his tail.
Lord Brocktree was staring up at him. "Stay out of this, or I'll make it my fight with you." Dottie prodded Bucko again, harder this time.
"Well?"
The king's former good humor was fast deserting him.
"Ach, I nae goin' to fight with no wee hair maid. What do you think I am, a bully?"
Dottie marched off down the steps, her nose in the air.
"Since you ask, sir, I'll tell you what I think you are. You're no king, just a liar and a coward."
In the horrified silence that followed, King Bucko came bounding down the steps after her, paws clenched tight.
"Yeah, you whey-faced whelp. We'll settle this right here and new. I'll no have a lassie cheekin' me."
He scratched a line in the ground with his scepter and tossed it aside. Placing his foot paw on the line, he snarled,
"Get your foot paw on this mark here and spit like this."
He put up his paws in fighting stance and spat over the other side of the line. Dottie gave him a frozen glare.
"Didn't your mater ever tell you 'tis rank bad manners to spit? Disgusting habit, sir, but quite in keeping with your form, what?"
Lord Brocktree stepped in, pointing his sword at Bucko. "No quick paw the mark scraps here, big bones. Let's do it properly, at the designated time. Now, do you accept this hare's challenge? Answer yes or no." The mountain hare's expression was murderous as he grated out his reply.
"Aye, striped dog, I accept the challenge. Ye'll be hearing from my seconds afore midnight."
Brocktree tipped a paw to his stripes courteously. "Thank you. I'll look forward to it. I bid you good night." As they strode off, the badger took Fleet Scott's paw. "Hurry. Go and get Girth, Juka, Ruff, and Logalog Gren. Tell them to meet us by the willows on the stream bank. Go." Dottie looked shaken. Brocktree patted her back gently. "Calm down now, miss. Temper's the sign of a loser. It affects the reason too much. We've got to start your education, and there's not a lot of time to do it in."
"That's always provided you want to win, eh?"
Dottie managed to smile.
"Oh, I want to win all right, sir."
21. Stiffener Maddock was leading his friends over the dunes toward the cliffs. Dawn's first slivers of light showed pale-washed gray behind the limestone heights. Rain teemed down unabated, squalled by the wind that flattened the dune grass. Wet and weary, they stumbled onward, assisting one another through the soft sand. Stiffener nearly jumped out of his skin when an otter popped up right in front of him.
"Aye, aye, what's this, then? The old hare's outin'? Ain't picked out very good weather for it, mate, have ye?"
Immediately recognizing the creature as a friend, Stiffener blew a dewdrop of rain from his nose and grinned.
"No, we ain't. Tell you something else, too. We've lost our picnic baskets. Linen, cutlery, victuals, the lot."
The otter threw a paw around the boxing hare's shoulders.
"Worst things happen at sea, eh? Not to worry me, old lad. We'll find ye a dry berth and a mouthful round the fire. My name's Brogalaw, skipper of sea otters. But let's get you and your fogies in out in the rain. Then we'll natter."
Brogalaw led them to the cliffs. He clapped paws to his mouth and shouted at the blank stone face, fighting to make himself heard above the storm.
"Ahoy the holt! 'Tis only Brog with some old hares what have escaped from the wildcat's blue bottoms on the mountain."
Troby coughed politely to gain the otter's attention.
"Beg pardon, old boy, but how'd you know that?"
Brogalaw winked.
"Tell you later, matey."
A sea buckthorn bush growing against the cliff face was pushed aside at one corner. The homely face of an otter wife appeared, her nose twitching disapprovingly.
"Land sakes, Brog, get those poor beasts in out the weather."
They filed inside, staring about. It was a big, rough and ready cave, full of otters and a full-grown gray heron, which stood immobile on one leg, watching as Brog grouped them about the fire. Bread was brought to them, with cheese baked on top of it. From a cauldron by the fire, the hares were served with steaming bowls of stew. The otter wife watched appreciatively as they ate hungrily.
"Good, ain't it? That's my special tater and whelk and leek chowder. I'm Brogalog's mum, Frutch. Ahoy, Derby, break out some seaweed grog and give this crew a beaker apiece. Ha ha! That'll put the life back in ye.
Stiffener could hear the rain outside battering the cliff face as he sat on the warm sand around the fire with his friends, listening to Bragalaw's story.
"'Tis like this, messmates. We're sea otters, see? Lived down the coast south a piece. Quite happy we was, till old Ungad arrived with his blue vermin. I tell you, we just got away with our lives that day. Had to run for it and hide, we did. Those vermin commandeered our best two ships. Stole them, you might say. So, there you have it. We sneaked up the coast after him, tried to take our ships back. No luck, of course. Far too many of the swabs for us. Anyhow, here we be, sitting in this cave waiting our chances, and open for better times to sail along.
Old Bramwell told the hare's tale of woe to the sea otters. The goodwife Frutch, a soft-hearted creature, wept silently as she listened, dabbing her apron to the tears.
"Oh, woe is you, poor beasts! Least they never slayed nor imprisoned none of ours. Can't we help 'em, Brog?"
The sturdy sea otter skipper raised sand with his rudder.
"There, there now, me little mum. Don't go flooding us all out with your tears. You'll have me blubbing soon. What sort of creatures we be if and we didn't give aid to others worse off than ourselves, I ask you. Of course we'll help."
Stiffener thanked him on behalf of all the hares. Bramwell moved nervously away from the great heron.
"Don't mind me asking, Brog, but what's that big bird doing living with you, what?"
Brogalog stroked the heron's snake-like neck fondly.
"Oh, this feller. Nice old cove, ain't he? Name's Rulango. Been with us since he was a chick. Never speaks, fends and feeds for hisself, and washes twice a day in the sea, don't you, mate?"
Brogalaw stopped stroking, and the heron nudged his paw with its long, pointed beak, wanting him to continue. He chuckled.
"I forgot to tell you. Don't ever start stroking his neck feathers. You could stroke all season, and it still wouldn't be enough for him. This bird likes to be stroked plenty. Now let's get ye sorted. There's pals of yours, you think, still on the mountain, but you don't rightly know where, eh?"
Blench toyed with the chowder ladle. It was a nice one.
"Aye, that's true, sir. I can't stand the thought that those vermin villains might be doing nasty things to 'em."
She began sobbing. Frutch sat down beside her and gave her a clean kerchief, and they sobbed together. Brogalaw twiddled his rudder tip awkwardly.
"Oh, I can't be a-doin' with this. Look at them, waterin' the chowder down. Action, that's what we need. Derby, me and you'll take a scout round the mountain. Rulango, me old fish grubber, would you take a flight round the mountain and see what you can see? Sail careful, though. Watch out for those blue vermin. Still, if in the bad weather holds out, most of Ungat's rascals should stay inside the mountain. Well, no time like the present. Let's get underway, mates."
Stiffener rose, dusting warm sand from himself.
"I'll come with you, Brog."
The sea otter would not hear of it.
"You're much too wearied. You need sleep, stiff mate. Come on now, you old codfish. A nice nap by the fire'll do you a power of good. We'll be back by the time you wake. If we ain't, then tell Blench and me mum a few funny stories. Cheer 'em up. You'll be doing me a big favor. Goodbye now."
Brogalaw, Derby, and Rulango were gone before any beast could argue. Rip Fang and Dumai, like most sea rats, were hard and cruel, and they were enjoying their new positions as horde captains. They sat by a small fire they had made from the remains of the oil barrel staves. Rip Fang poked at it with a long willow cane while he watched the three creatures searching the cavern, calling out to them at frequent intervals.
"Hey there, Frawl. Stay where I can see you. Don't go hiding in dark corners where you can catch a quick nap."
"How are we supposed to find anything if we can't search?"
the former stoat captain complained. Rip Fang strutted over to him, swishing the cane.
"Get that paw out. I'll teach you to cheek an officer."
Frawl hesitated. Dumai fitted an arrow to his bow. Aiming at the stoat, he drew string.
"Do like he says, stupid face. I'm warning you, I never miss."
Completely humiliated, Frawl was forced to hold out his paw.
Swish!
Rip Fang delivered a stinging cut of the lithe willow.
Frawl's face went tight with pain, and he dropped his paw. Rip Fang smiled at him, lifting Frawl's paw with a cane.
Like some more, or have you learned your lesson, Winkle Brain?
Frawl kept his eyes fixed on the ground.
Captain Rip Fang, sir, I've learned my lesson, Captain Rip Fang.
The sea rat smirked at his brother.
See, my one's learned now. Every time he speaks to me, it's got to be either Sir or Captain Rip Fang. How's your one doing?
Dumai kept the arrow notched as he called to Meyerfleck, who was trying to appear unobtrusive behind a fat stalagmite.
Stand out where I can see your worthless eye, you scum!
Meyerfleck hastened to obey, her shouts echoing in the cavern.
Yes, sir, Captain Dumai, sir! Right away, sir!
Dumai looked slightly exasperated.
This one does everything you tell her. She ain't much fun. Probably 'cause she knows she can't run faster than an arrow.
Rip Bang sat back down by the fire.
How do you know she can't? Go on, try her.
A wicked smile hovered on Dumai's face. He sighted along the arrow and shouted sharply at Meyerfleck.
Run!
Meyerfleck was fast, but not as quick as an arrow. Dumai looked stunned and dropped the bow.
You made me do that. I didn't mean to slay her. What'll the wildcat say? He might have me killed with an arrow.
Rip Fang gave his brother a playful shove.
Don't be daft. Here, watch this and listen. Frawl, Grottle, get yourselves over here on the double.
The hapless pair scurried across, saluting.
Yes, sir. Captain Rip Fang, sir.
Rip Fang adopted a serious face and a grave tone.
Did you hear that Meyerfleck shouting and saying nasty, horrible things about his mightiness? Terrible things. Things you couldn't repeat. Did you two hear her?
The willow cane pointed from one to the other as they answered.
Yes, sir, Captain Rip Fang, sir.
We both heard her, Captain Rip Fang, sir.
Rip Fang shrugged and winked at his brother.
See?
Dumai grinned as recognition dawned upon him. Then he was struck by another idea.
Aye, and did you both see that and attack me and this other captain and try to escape?
The answers came back as expected.
Yes, sir, Captain Dumai, sir.
We both saw it all, Captain Dumai, sir.
The two captains tittered like naughty beast babes who had wriggled out of being punished. Rip Fang nodded toward the body of Meyerfleck.
Tie that thing with rocks and sling it into pool, then get on with your searching.
Grottle bowed respectfully.
We need rope to do that, Captain Rip Fang, sir.
Dumai looked at the stunted fox as though he were stupid.
Then go and get some rope, lots of it. We needs to tie you two up tight tonight. You'll be staying down here. Us captains got to get some decent rest and hot victuals. Well, don't stand there looking gormless. Move yourself.
Grottle did get lots of rope, a great coil of line from one of the ships. That night, he and Frawl were bound together from tails to necks. Rip Fang tested the knots, then pushed the two bound captives down.
Make sure you get a good sleep now. You'll be busy tomorrow. Ha 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 ha. Good night.
When the two captains had gone, Frawl growled at Grottle angrily.
Why did you bring so much rope? I can hardly move a whisker. We'll be no good for anything in the morning.
Grottle's reply was even angrier.
Then be still and shut your useless mouth. I didn't bring all this rope down here just to be tied with it. Those two mud brains don't know it, but I found where the long ears made their escape from. There's a way out of here.
A way out? Where?
I'll tell you when you've chewed through this rope. Now get your teeth working, Stoat. We'll need this rope to reach the place. That's why I brought so much.
Grottle lay still. They were back to back, but he could hear Frawl gnawing at the rope.
And don't be all night about it. We'll be lucky to last another 2 days with no food and those cruel fools guarding us. Chew harder, Frawl. It's either get away tonight or we're both dead beasts.
Ungat Trun did not sleep that night either.
His dreams were haunted by the shadowy form of a badger lord with a sword, a big, double-hilted war blade, getting closer each night. Early evening of that same day saw Bragalaw and Dervi returning to their cave. Stiffener and the hares were awake, eagerly awaiting any news the sea otters could disclose to them, but there was none. Bragalaw stood before the fire, steam rising from his fur.
"Rain ain't let up by a drop. I tell you, the wind fair chases it round every rock on that mountain."
Dervi joined his skipper, and they both sipped bowls of broth. Not wishing to appear ill-mannered or impatient, Stiffener let a short time elapse before asking the question.
"Did you catch sight of any hares, Brog?" "Sorry, matey, but we didn't. Searched high and low, though, didn't we, Dervi?"
"Aye, we did that. But all we saw was foul weather, wet rock, and the odd glimpse of blue vermin. Nary a hare. Is Rilango returned yet?"
Frutch fed the fire with driftwood.
"Oh, that old bird'll turn up when it suits him. I'd wager he's out fishing. Rilango likes to fish in the rain."
Thoroughly dejected, the hares lounged about, constantly looking toward the entrance to see if the heron would show up. Night fell, and there was still no sign of him. Two younger otters took out a whistle and a small drum and began playing a pretty tune. The one beating the drum began to sing.
"Oh, I am a sea otter. I lives by the sea. I knows every tide, ebb, and flood. And I'll never break free from the sea. No, not me. 'Cause the sea's in a sea otter's blood. Haul your nets in, mates, and let every beast wish that tonight we'll be dining on saltwater fish. Well, I've seen her stormy, sunny, and calm, and I've tasted the good briny spray. Just show her respect, and she'll do you no harm. She'll send you home safe every day. Throw those pots in, mates, down deep to the sea. Tonight, you and me'll have lobster for tea. Them waves come a-crashing on out of the blue. Aye, big rollers, all topped white with foam. I sees my old boat prow a-cutting 'em clean through, and I sings, then a-sailin' back home. We're ashore now, mates. Let your mainsail go limp. I've brought my old mum a great net full of shrimp."
Scarce had the otters finished singing when Rilango stalked into the cave. Bragalaw stroked the great heron's neck.
"Well, now, about time you showed up, mate. Did you have a good feed of fish out there?"
Rilango nodded several times. Bragalaw tickled his crest.
"You're an old scallywag, fishing while these good beasts are waiting, gnawing their whiskers for news of their mateys. So what have you got to say for yourself?"
Rilango tapped the sandy floor with his widespread talons. The sea otter smoothed out an expanse of the sand, winking happily at Stiffener.
"Our friend's got news for us. Watch this. Right ho, me old bird. Tell these creatures what ye saw."
The heron began drawing in the smooth sand with his beak. Stiffener moved close, interpreting what he saw.
"There's the coastline and the sea. Now he's sketching out our mountain. Look at this, Bramwell."
The ancient hare joined Stiffener and watched admiringly.
"I say, this bird is a good artist. That's Salamandastron, sure enough, viewed from the seaward side, if I'm not mistaken. What's that?" "Oh, I see, it's him, circling round the rocks, about three-quarters of the way up. He's drawing a circle in the mountain. Wait, 'tis a window hole, near the top level. But I don't understand. What are all those funny leaf-shaped things he's sketching inside the window hole?"
Stiffener stared hard at the leaf shapes.
"Strange-looking things. I can't tell what they are."
However, Bragalaw identified them without hesitation.
"Why, bless your heart, matey, they're long ears, just like yours. Good bird, you've found where Trun's keeping the hares locked up, is that right?"
The heron nodded his head emphatically, then retired to a corner where he perched on one leg. Blench viewed the sketch with dismay.
"Oh, locks! We've no chance of climbing up that eye. What's to be done, Stiffener?"
The boxing hare bit his lip and scratched his whiskers.
"Aye, what's to be done?
A difficult question, marm.
Troby slumped moodily by the fire.
Of all the rotten luck, chaps, the blinking bounders locked him up in a place far too high for us to do anything. I mean, how in the name of suffering salad are we supposed to get up there, eh? What?
Brogolaw's mother, Frutch, looked appealingly at him.
Oh, say you can help the poor beast, Brog.
The skipper of sea otters closed his eyes patiently.
I'll give it a try, Mom. But don't go getting your handkerchief out and weeping, or I won't be able to think of anything. Quiet now, and let me ponder this.
Frutch blinked back grateful tears. She avoided reaching for her kerchief as she smiled at Blanche.
Don't ye fret, my dear. My Brog'll find a way to help ye.
Silence reigned in the cave. Outside, the wind whipped up the rain into a fresh assault on the cliff face, and waves could be heard breaking on the shore. Brogolaw nodded to himself a few times, as if confirming his thoughts. Then he opened his eyes.
Right, mates. Here's the top and bottom of it all. 'Tis too high for us to climb up to 'em, but they could climb down with the right help. This is my plan. We need ropes, good long uns. Once we've got 'em, Rulango can fly the ropes up to your mates, and they can lower themselves down.
It was a splendid idea, but Willet found an obstacle.
I don't see any great long ropes hereabouts. You'll forgive my saying, Brog, but the plan won't jolly well work without ropes.
Brogolaw was forced to agree with Willet.
You're right, Marm. Ahoy! Rulango's drawing again.
The skipper of sea otters took one look at the sketch.
You're a crafty old wing flapper, mate. Derby, Colum, Spray Dog, come with me in Rulango. There's work to be done.
22. Cloaked in lengths of old sailcloth, two blue horde rats stood deck watch on the bows of one of Unget Trun's vast flotilla of vessels, which were anchored in the bay facing Salamandastron. Both rats blinked rain from their eyes, staring miserably at the mountain.
Bet they're all sitting snug and dry in there tonight, mate.
Why, quaffing grog and filling their bellies with vittles.
No, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. Vittles is short and grog's only for Unget Trun and his cronies. I'll bet we'd get stuck on half rations in a day or so.
Maybe you're right, Cully. But I wager they're all warm and dry and sleeping their fat heads off, snoring like hogs.
Huh. And look at us, beauties, standing out here on deck watch in the storm, soaking, cold, hungry, and sleepy.
Whoa! What was that?
What? I didn't see nothing. What was it?
Like some kind of big bird swooped down aft there.
Never. I think you need some shut-eye. You see funny things when you're tired. Or at least you thinks you sees 'em.
But I did see it. I'm certain I did. Down at the stern end.
Well, let's go down and take a look. If 'tis there, a quick chop of me cutlass'll settle it. I'll take it down the galley and we'll share it with the cook.
Both rats staggered down the slippy deck, clinging to the rails, and climbed the stairs to the stern peak.
Well, where is this big bird of yours?
It must have flew off, but I saw it.
Arr, you're talking through your tail, mate. There wasn't no big bird here. All the birds is long gone.
Oh, they are they? Then tell me, where's that big, thin, heaving line that was coiled up right where you're standing?
I don't know, clever snout. You tell me.
The big bird took it.
Why? Because it thought it was a giant worm? Don't talk rubbish, mate. The hunger's gone to your head. That fox Grottle must have took it. He was here today looking for ropes.
No, I'd take me affidavit. The rope was here when we came on watch. I saw it.
Aye, just like you saw the big bird. Listen, mate, you keep on seeing big birds and vanishing ropes, and I'm not coming on deck watch with you anymore.
Rulango dropped the last rope to Brog and his otters, who were waiting in the sea. Silently, they coiled 9 strong, thin, heaving lines about them and swam off shoreward, swift and sleek. Derby caused great merriment back at the cave as he related what he had heard, imitating the vermin voices expertly, while Brog knotted the heaving lines into one massively long rope. Perlo watched the long coils building up into a great thick cylinder.
"Great seasons! No beast'd be able to lift that whackin' huge thing. How do we move it to the mountain?"
Rogalaw had thought it all out carefully.
"Nine of us forms a line, each one carrying only a single rope's length. When we reaches your mountain, Rilango takes the end and flies up to the window and passes it to him. No fancy twiddles, mate. A plain and simple plan. But not to worry. Me and my crew will do it. You rest here."
Stiffener had a word to say about that.
"Sorry, Brog, but I'm coming with you, mate. 'Tis my sworn duty. I wouldn't feel right lying warm and dry here while your otters were out facing all the danger. I'm going."
The otter skipper shook his paw warmly.
"'Twill be a pleasure to have you along, stiff mate. Now, there's no time to lose while 'tis night and bad weather. If we puts a move on, there's a chance we could get your messmates down from the mountain afore daylight. Harkin, crew, we got a hard and fast night's work. Let's be about it."
Though he was an old hare, Stiffener's seasons of exercise routines had kept him fit, and he bore his section of the rope as well as any sea otter. Brogalog dog-trotted along in the lead, staying to the cliff tops, which were easier to travel than the deep sands of the dunes. All nine creatures wore hooded cloaks of soft, green-dyed bark cloth. Spume was whipped from the high-crested waves by the rain-sheeting wind, while dried-out seaweed flotsam from the tide line tumbled crazily about on the wet sand. The skies were moonless, strewn with banks of dark, scudding cloud. Ahead of the column, Rilango winged low over the stunted grass, striving to keep a straight course to the distant mountain. Brogalaw had spoken truly. It was a task which was proving to be both hard and fast. They halted not far from Salamandastron's base. Brogalaw and Stiffener, accompanied by the heron, went ahead to scout out the lay of the land. The other seven sea otters sat down on the lee side of a hillock, still carrying the rope. They rested, but stayed alert, ready to go again at a moment's notice. On reaching the sheer rock face, Brogalaw and his friends crouched in the shelter of a bushy spur.
"Ahoy, Stiff! You're familiar with this place,"
the sea otter whispered.
"Be there any exits or entrances round here, mate?"
The boxing hare blinked out into the rain-washed night.
"Not round here, Brog. Shh! Some beast's coming."
On leaden limbs, a weasel sentry plodded by, keeping his head down against the weather, glancing neither left nor right. Rogalaw breathed a sigh of relief as the weasel was swallowed up by the night.
"Ship me rudder, mates. That was close."
However, he spoke too soon. The sentry, coming in the opposite direction, heard the otter as he marched by. Thrusting into the shadows with his spear, he called for assistance to the weasel who had just passed that way.
"Hoy! Skell! Back here, quick!"
Stiffener heard a note of uncertainty in the guard's voice as he shouted around the spur at them.
"I knows you're in there. Come out now and show yourselves. Skell, will you hurry up? I got prisoners cornered here."
Stiffener came out at top speed, bounding and leaping. He caught the nervous guard unawares and floored him with a massive uppercut. Flinging aside his cloak, the hare grabbed the fallen guard's helmet, shield, and spear. Clapping the helmet on, he held the shield high, masking his face, beckoning Brogalaw and Rilango to step out as if he had captured them. Rather slow and cautious, the weasel sentry appeared out of the darkness and approached Stiffener warily.
"Where'd you find these two, Rego?"
Stiffener pointed around the darkened spur with his spear.
"In there,"
he muttered gruffly. The weasel edged forward and peered around. He saw his companion lying sprawled on the ground and turned quickly.
"You ain't Reg...
Stiffener's oaken spear butt rapped him sharply between the eyes, and he dropped without a sound. Brogalaw and Rilango dragged the two unconscious guards into the bushes. The otter skipper began looping the rope end around the heron's long, bony leg.
"We'll stay down here and pay the line out, mate. You fly up there and give 'em your end. They'll know what to do."
Stiffener glanced up at the sky.
"Too late, Brog.
'Twould be dawn in an hour or so. The journey here took longer than we thought. My friends are old. They wouldn't stand a chance in broad daylight out on the mountain face.
Bragalov was reluctantly forced to agree.
You got a good point there, Steph. So, what's the drill now?
Stiffener made a quick decision.
Only one thing for it, friend. Let Rilango take the lineup. When they makes it secure, I'll shin up there and tell them what's going on. I'll take me cloak and stop with them. You and the bird go back and hide out with your otters for the day. All of you come back ere at nightfall, and we'll do it then. 'Tis the only safe way.
Most of the prisoners were sleeping in the high mountain cell. Torleap and Sailears were on duty rota, standing by the window, listening to see if they could hear any news from the chamber below them. Torleap leaned on the sill and rubbed his red-rimmed eyes.
These two new brutes, Rip Fang and Doom Thingy, not much at gossiping, are they? Snore, snore all night. That's all they've blinkin' well done. I say, Marm, what's the matter?
Sailears was facing the window. She tried to keep her voice calm as she explained the situation.
Don't move, Tor. Stay completely still, eyes front. Don't turn round, whatever you do. There's a whackin' great bird of some sort perched on the window ledge. Bloomin' creature could take your head off with a single swipe of his beak from where he is. Don't move. Let me deal with this, what?
She put on her most winning smile and spoke softly out of the window.
"Deary me, you are a fine big feller, ain't you? What brings you up here on a night like this, friend?"
For answer, Rulango lifted his leg. Sailears was taken aback.
"Well, biff me sideways! He's brought us a rope!"
Torleap turned slowly and found himself staring into the heron's fierce eyes. He moved closer and waited a moment.
"Well, he ain't taken my head off. So we must be a friend come to help us. Am I right, sir?"
Rulango nodded twice, shaking the rope-draped leg. Under the bird's watchful eye, Sailears unfastened the line and began knotting it to an iron ring set in the wall.
"Take it from me, my fine feathered friend. If I were 20 seasons younger, I still wouldn't live long enough to thank you for the favor you've done us, what?"
Torleap was wakening the sleepers.
"Come on, chaps, up on your paws. We're being rescued. Woe be, Marm, I'd be obliged if you keep the old voice down, what?"
Rulango flapped off into the graying dawn. Sailears had half of her body out of the window space when she looked down.
"Well, I'm blowed. Guess what? There's some beast, a hare, I think, trying to climb up the valley rope. Look at this, Torleap."
Torleap squinted down through his monocle.
"By the left, you're right, Marm. Looks like a hare. Hey there, you chaps. Lend a paw to haul the feller up here."
When Stiffener was eventually hoisted into the cell and they recognized their old companion, there was profuse hugging, kissing, and paw-shaking. The boxing hare put a paw to his lips, urging them not to make too much noise.
"Coil the rest of that rope in afore any beast sees it, mates."
Dumai lay back on a straw pallet facing the long rectangular window of the chamber below the hare's cell. Half asleep, he rubbed his eyes.
"Rip Fang, you awake, brother? Was that a rope I saw going up in the air just then?"
Rip Fang sat up and yawned.
"Aye, 'twas probably Grottel and Frawl escaped. Trying to catch a passing cloud, the fools was. Ha, ha, ha!"
Dumai probed at one eye, blinking furiously.
"Must have been an eyelid drooped down over me eye. That blue dye plays havoc with my eyesight. Thought it was a rope."
Rip Fang was now up and about.
"You never know. It might have been. Let's go and check on them long ears they got locked upstairs."
But the two rats never got that far. On emerging from the chamber, they were faced with the sinister form of Ungat Trun's Grand Fragoro.
"His mightiness would have words with you. Follow me."
The wildcat looked as if he had passed a sleepless night. He sat in front of a blue-smoking brazier, draped in a silken blanket. Rip Fang and Dumai stood stiffly at attention, both thinking that he knew about the wanton slaying of Meyerfleck. Trun surveyed his two new captains from the corner of a red-rimmed eye.
You two were sea rats. You must have sailed many places and seen lots of strange things, eh?
Rip Fang, being the more eloquent, spoke for them both.
"'Tis so, mighty one. Why do you ask?"
He quailed as the frightening eyes turned to meet his.
"'Never answer a question with a question when speaking to Ungat Trun. That way you may see the next sunset. In all your travels, have you ever met a badger, a big beast who carries a double-hilted sword on his back? Think now. Did you ever encounter such a creature?"
"No, your mightiness. We never met such a beast, sire."
The wildcat dismissed them with a wave of his tail.
"Leave me now. Go about your duties."
On their way down to the dining hall, Dumai chuckled with relief.
"I thought he'd found out about Meyerfleck."
"Shut up, oaf. He will if and you keep shouting it round. Funny, though, him asking about a badger like that."
"Aye. I've never even seen a badger, have you?"
"Not real-like, but sometimes I gets horrible dreams about one, a big un, like Trun said, but not carrying a sword like the badger he wants to know about."
"Is that right? I never knew you dreamed about a badger, Rip Fang. How do you know what a badger looks like if you ain't never seen one?"
"I never said I ain't heard of one. Look, will you shut up about badgers? I don't like badgers. And I can't help it if I dream about one, can I? Let's go and get some breakfast. I'm starving."
But breakfast was disappointing. Dumai prodded with his dagger at the tiny portion of mackerel on a dock leaf and wrinkled his nose, sniffing at it suspiciously.
"One stingy little cob of fish. Going bad, too, I think. Is this all the victuals we gets? I thought we signed on for better grub than rotten fish. Hey, you, come here."
The blue horde rat cook saluted.
"Anything I can do for you, Cap'n?"
"Cap'n? Oh, why? What's wrong with the vittles round here?"
"That's all there is, Cap'n. Wish his mightiness would get that fox viz to magic up some more provisions."
Rip Fang puffed out his narrow chest. He felt it was beneath him to bandy words with a mere low-ranking skibby.
"Right, well. Anything else to report?"
"Aye. Two outside guards deserted, Cap'n,"
the cook informed him with an insolent grin.
"There'll no doubt be a few more if and the grubstakes don't improve."
Rip Fang had taken a dislike to the cook, so he prodded him several times on the end of his bulbous nose.
"Bad fortune to him if and they do. We'll fetch him back and use him to bait up the fishhooks. Now stop your gossiping and get back to work. Oh, those two who've gone missing. Bring us their pieces of fish. That's an order."
He nudged his brother and winked broadly at him.
"One of the joys of being a cap'n, eh?"
Outside, the weather was beginning to clear. Mist rose from the damp rocks, and a warm breeze started to sweep the clouds away. Summer had begun. It was to be a most memorable season for all. Most memorable. 23. The storm had not penetrated inland. It was driven up coast and out to sea. Dottie sat on the stream bank, breakfasting on fresh fruit salad with her friends. The hair maid was now under instruction as a contender for King Bucko Big Bones's crown. Gren read out the rules which had been delivered by the king's seconds.
2 days from now, the three events will commence: the bragging, the feasting, and the fighting. The bragging will take place on the eve of day one. Whichever beast wins the brag will be the creature voted by common consent of the crowd to have outbragged the other. Dawn of day two, the feasting will commence. The victor will be the one left sitting, still eating, at sunset, or until one creature yields to the other. Noon of day three is the fighting. No weapons or any arms whatsoever are allowed to be taken into the ring. All supporters and seconds must have vacated the ring by the time the crown is dropped. The king has the right to decide whether the contest be from scratch or moving freely. The moment one beast cannot rise and continue fighting, the other will be declared the winner. Note: in the event of bragging or feasting being won, lost, or declared a tie, the winner of the fighting will be declared outright king.
These are the approved rules.
Fleet Scott laughed scathingly.
Fuck those rules made by himself, eh? He's only got to win the jolly old fighting, and he's home and dry, what?
That's right, old feller. King Bucko makes the rules in his own court. You've got to be better than him to change them.
Aye, and you've got to blinkin' well prove it, too.
They turned to see two extremely fit-looking young hares lounging nearby, taking everything in.
I'll give you young whelps something to think about if you don't move yourselves,
Rockcherry growled. The hares did move, not away, but closer. They were obviously twin brothers, alike as peas in a pod. They spoke alternately, beginning or finishing off sentences, as if each knew what the other was thinking. Fleet Scott was watching them closely as they addressed the badger.
Don't get touchy, sir. We're on your and the pretty one's side. Rather on the pretty one's side, especially, what? I'm Southpaw, and this fat ugly one's Bob Weave.
Fat ugly one? Go away, you bounder. Let Miss Dotty say.
Come on, miss. Ain't I the best-looking one who cuts the finest figure? Tell the truth now.
Fleet Scott approached them, his paw extended.
I'll tell you the truth, you young rips. Bob Weave and Southpaw, eh? You're the orphaned twins, grandsons of Stiffener Medic. I can see it in you both. Fighting hares, born and bred, what?
Rather. How do you do, sir? Pleased to meet you, old chap.
They exchanged greetings with all the party. Dotty took an immediate liking to the twins. Though they had the biggest, toughest-looking paws she had ever seen on a hare, both were extra gentle when they shook her paw. Rocktree had changed his attitude and was quite cordial with them.
So, friends, you have the looks of two very perilous beasts. How can you help us?
Fleet Scott threw a sudden barrage of punches at them. Still smiling and hardly taking notice, they repelled every blow in a casually expert manner. The old hare nodded.
Your grandpa talked about you night and day. Said you were the finest boxers on earth.
They shuffled modestly.
Oh, we keep ourselves busy, sir. Always up to the jolly old mark, you know.
Dotty was bursting to ask the athletic pair a question.
Beg pardon, chaps, but if you two are so good, then why haven't you challenged King Bucko?
Quite simple, really, Miss Dotty.
Right. If I challenged Bucko and floored him, then I'd be King Southpaw. But I couldn't give old Bob Weave orders.
True, miss.
And if I challenged Bucko and won, I'd be King Bob Weave.
Ha! Imagine me trying to give Southpaw orders.
Besides, Bucko Big Bones, between you and me and the gatepost, he's a great big windbag.
But he can be sly and dangerous as well. Makes all his own rules, and breaks them too, what?
Juka's sling was beginning to wave her tail impatiently.
Then canst thou tell us how the maid will defeat him?
Well, we can't tell you exactly, marm, but we can help her by pointing out Bucko's weaknesses.
Girth chuckled appreciatively.
Hur, you be doing us'ns a girt favor if any can, young sirs. Tell away now, we'm all ears.
Dotty learned a great deal by listening to Bob Weave and Southpaw. King Bucko liked to play jokes, but he hated the joke being on him. He was vain, quick-tempered, and resorted to cheating at the blink of an eye. But he was surrounded by loyal mountain hares, and moreover, he was no fool at fighting, and always won at any cost. Ruff wagged a serious paw at the hare maid.
So you see, miss, Bucko ain't no pushover. We got to figure how you can use his faults agin him, upset his apple cart.
Schmack him, Dale, with a big stick. That's what skickles do.
Merkle Wart shooed her babe off with a dire warning.
I'll smack your tail with a big stick. Go and play, you little plague. Can't you see this is a serious conservation?
Skittles climbed up onto Brocktree's sword hilt and sulked. The Badger Lord reached up and patted the hog babe's paw. Maybe Skittles has provided us with the answer.
Brr, you mean smacking your king's tail with sticks, sir?
Rocktree scratched his stripes thoughtfully. In a manner of speaking, yes, we smack his pride. Can you see what I'm getting at? Logalog Gren caught on to the idea immediately.
Aye, that's how Dotty'll win, by
by keeping cool and calm. Turn the jokes on Bucko. Get the supporters on her side.
Juka began warming to the plan.
Play the good-mannered, well-brought-up hair maid. Use thy wit against the braggart. Make him fall into his own traps.
Dottie's friends all began making suggestions to help her.
Use his own weight against him. Duck and weave.
Aye. Show him up to his supporters as a fraud and a cad, what?
Keep your nose in the air and dismiss Bucko as a ruffian.
Make he king wrassily, Miss Dot. Don't he box him.
Don't fret, miss. We'll show you one or two boxing tricks.
Rather. And when he's least expecting it, you can use him.
Right. We'll outthink him at every turn.
All that first summer's day, they sat on the stream bank, working out a master plan. Dottie practiced her new role of the cool, calm, and distant hair maid, while she had trouble avoiding the admiring glances of Southpaw and Bob Weave, who were obviously smitten with her. Every now and then, the twins would be so overcome that they would move further up the bank and box the ears off one another. Cubba and Ruku paddled up at midnoon with the logboat strung out behind them. Cubba shipped paddles and looked questioningly at Gren.
"What's going on here, Marm? Are you wagering on which of those two hares will knock the other's block off first?"
The Gwasom chieftain helped to moor the vessels.
"Something like that. I'll tell you about it later."
Over the next 2 days, Dottie wrestled with girth, was instructed in the art of boxing by two very enthusiastic young hares, and listened to the wisdom of her elders. It was all very helpful and instructive, except for one thing. Part of her training included a strict diet, no food, and precious little water. For a creature of her young appetite, it was nothing less than sheer brutal torture. When meals were served, she was forced to sit in one of the logboats, guarded by Ruff, out of the sight of food. Nursing a beaker filled with water, with a light sprinkle of crushed oats added to it, she glared at her otter friend.
"Rotten and stingy, that's what you lot are, miserable grub swipers. When I'm a kingess, or do you think queen sounds better, I'll banish the whole bally gang. Every beast who refused a fatal young royal beauty a morsel. Away with him."
Ruff swiped her ears playfully.
"'Tis only for your own good, young'un. You'll thank us for this one day."
"Oh, and pardon me, what day will that be, sir, what?"
Glancing over her shoulder, Ruff whispered,
"Hush ye now, miss. Here comes Bucko hisself."
A light skiff with two mountain hares plying it drew alongside. Bucko was seated beneath a canopy with a jug of pale cider and a tray full of pasties and tarts. He grinned roguishly at his challenger.
"Weel now, 'tis a bonny summer noontide, lassie. Would you no care for a tart or a pasty? Maybe a beaker of this good pale cider? Join me, pretty one?"
Dottie blinked serenely.
"Thank you kindly, but I'd rather not. I've just finished quite a large luncheon."
Bucko bit into a tart, and blackcurrant juice ran down his chin.
Not like a fresh blackcurrant tarty, my pretty."
Dottie took a dainty sip of her clouded oatmeal water.
"Not like a fresh mountain hare, I always say. Kindly remove yourself downstream, sir. Your table manners offend me. There may be a few mad toads down there who'd be glad of your company. Toads aren't too choosy, you know."
Bucko bolted the rest of the tart and licked his paws.
"Ach, and ye'd know aboot toads' manners, I can."
Dottie gave him her sweetest smile.
"Indeed, I do. Mother always held them up to me as a bad example. Pity your mother hadn't the sense to show you."
Bucko scowled. He tried to stand up, but the skiff swayed.
"I'll thank ye to leave my mither oot of this. Another word aboot her, and I'll teach ye a braw sharp lesson."
The hair maid stared down her nose at the irate king.
"Pray save your threats until the appointed time, sir."
Bucko signaled his hares to row on.
"Ye do weel to mind that there's many a beastie got themselves slain by their ain sharp tongue,"
he called back to Dottie. Dottie waved delicately to him with a clean kerchief.
"Just so, sir.
and you'd do well to know that there's many a creature with a sloppy tongue slipped and broke their neck upon it. Toodaloo and all that.
Ruff squeezed Dottie's paw as the hare's boat pulled upstream. His face wreathed in a big smile.
Full marks, miss. You was magnificent.
Dottie kept up the pose, simpering and fluttering her lids.
Why, thank you, my good fellow. Did it earn one, perhaps a smidgen of that woodland trifle which Girth made, what?
The otter shook his head firmly.
Afraid not, miss.
Yeah! Go and boil your beastly head, you great slab-sided, boat-nosed, plank-tailed excuse for a worthless water-walloper!
Brocktree poked his striped head through the willow fronds.
Did our young lady say something then, Ruff?
Bless her grateful little heart, she did, sir. She was just thanking us for all the trouble we're taking over her education. She's fair overcome with gratitude.
The Badger Lord waggled his paw at Dottie. Mustn't get overexcited now, must we, Missy? Time for your afternoon nap. Remember, 'tis the bragging challenge tomorrow evening. Can't have you overtiring yourself, can we?
Sitting with the luncheon party, Juka Sling put aside her bowl of cold mint tea. She listened wide-eyed to Dottie telling Ruff and Brocktree what she thought of them.
Zounds! Methinks yon hairmaid could give young Grood a lesson in choice language. Grood, cover thy ears.
It was the evening of the first day. Crowds gathered at the log-bounded arena amid a festive air. There was music, singing, the sound of picnic hampers being shared, and banter from supporters on both sides. Candied fruit and treasured possessions, knives, belts, tail and paw rings of precious materials, some studded with glinting stones, were changing paws as betting opened. As usual, Bucko was the firm favorite. No beast had ever seen him lose, so they weren't about to wager on an outsider. Amid a roll of drums and a blast from a battered bugle, King Bucko Big Bones entered the ring with an honor guard of his cronies. He wore his broad belt, his cloak, two silver paw rings, and the laurel-twined crown perched on his brow at a jaunty angle. Twirling the cloak dramatically, he shed it and threw the garment to his minions. Then he paraded around the perimeter, acknowledging the cheers by leaping high with one clenched paw held up. Dottie wore a demure cloak of light blue, with the slightest hint of a frill at its neck. She carried her bag and stood patiently while Merkel Wart and Juka made final adjustments to her flowered straw bonnet, specially loaned to her by Merkel Wart for the occasion. Southpaw and Bob Weave gallantly helped her over the log barrier, and she entered the arena alone. The bank bull referee puffed himself up officiously and roared in his stentorian voice,
"Gentle beasts, all! Pray silence for the bragging. King Bucko will not remove his crown for this event. The winner will be judged by the popular opinion of your very good selves. The challenger this evening is Miss Dorothea Duckworthy Dilfontaine of Mossflower."
There was a smattering of applause. Dottie tapped the bank bowl.
"Correction, my good sir. The name's Duckfontaine Dilworthy. Would you kindly re-announce me, please?"
The pompous bank bull was forced to comply with her request. This brought a few encouraging laughs and some shouts.
"That's the stuff, miss! You tell the old windbag! A gal that jolly well stands up for herself, what? Good show!"
The bank bull cut them short with a glare. Then he shouted,
"Let the bragging start!"
Silence fell on the crowd. Dottie stood quite still in the center of the ring and said nothing. Bucko paced about the edges as if stalking her. Suddenly, he did a splendid cartwheel and a breathtaking leap. He landed very close to Dottie, who did not flinch, and began his brag.
"Yerahoo! I'm the mighty monarch, Frey of the Mountains. My name's King Bucko Big Bones. What do you think of that, my bonny wee lassie?"
Dottie ignored him and waved cheerily to her friends.
Isn't he clever? He knows his own name. It must have taken him simply ages to learn it, what?
There was a ripple of laughter from the crowd. Bucko stamped until dust rose and leapt clear over Dottie's head. Still, she did not move from her place. Bucko thrust out his barrel chest and thumped it.
I'm nae fear to any beast. I was born on a moonless night midst thunder and lightning.
Amid the hush that followed, Dottie carefully wiped a speck of dust from her paw with a lace-edged kerchief.
Tut-tut! What dreadful weather you had! Did you get wet?
This time the laughter increased. Raucous guffaws could be heard, some with a distinct mountain hare tone to them. Bucko had to wait for the merriment to subside, his jaw and his paws clenched tight. He thrust his face forward until he was eye to eye with Dottie, and his big voice boomed forth.
Yerrahoo, wee beastie! Have you ever looked death straight in the eye, eh? Then look at him which stands afore ye!
The crowd waited with bated breath. Dottie peered even closer at her opponent until her nose touched his.
You do look a little peaky, sir. All that shouting can't be doing you much good. All that jumping about, too. Have you got a pain in your tummy? Is that it?
Roars and hoots of laughter greeted this remark. Creatures at the ringside were wiping tears from their eyes.
Ha 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 ha! Pain in the tummy! That's a good un!
King Bucko was shaking all over. Glaring murderously at Dottie, he gripped both paws, raising them over her head as if he were going to bring them down and crush her. She nodded in prim approval of his action.
Bit of exercise, sir. Good! My mother always says exercise is the best cure for tummy ache. Come on now. Up, down, up. Breathe through your nose. Head well back, sir.
She moved just as Bucko's paws came crashing down, one of them catching her shoulder, knocking her slightly off balance. The crowd booed.
Foul! Foul play, sir! Struck the little hare maid!
Several hares, Baron Drucko, Ruff, and the bankbull referee, leapt the logs and rushed forward. The hares and Drucko restrained Bucko, and Ruff placed a paw about Dottie, while the bankbull placed himself between the contestants, bellowing,
Disqualification! Your Majesty has broke the rules! No creature, I said, no creature, is allowed to strike another at a bragging challenge. Out of this arena, sire, at this very instant.
End of side five. To continue, turn the cassette over.